So today's daf in Masechet Shabbat is daf Mem Beis. So we got up to the two dots over here, and the last thing we were talking about was the removal of dangers to the public, and that there's no Iser Derabbanan when it comes to that. Meanwhile, we got a wonderful insight into some questions about the relationship of Melacha Shena Tzrich Lagufa and Edova Shena Miskavin, which I left you to think about because it gives you an opportunity to probe deeply into the nature of Melacha Shabbos. Okay, but we got up to the Mishnah that says that you're allowed to put in the Mecham, you can put cold water into it or into a kos in order that it should get warm. Now, in the Braita, we have a tremendous expansion of the issues over here. And the Braita says like this, Tana Rabbanan, Noten Adam Chamin Letoch HaTzonein, Velo HaTzonein Letoch HaChamin, Divrei Beit Shammai. You're allowed to put hot water into cold water, but you can't put cold water into hot water. So says Beit Shammai. Now, according to Rashi, the reason for this is a concept called Tata'a Gavar. Please add this to your list of munachim. There is a machlokus whether Tata'a Gavar or whether Ila'a Gavar. So when you have something that is inside of a container and you're pouring from something into that thing, if you hold Tata'a Gavar, then it means the thing that you are pouring into is always going to be more a source of energy than the thing that you're pouring from. So therefore, if you're pouring into a container of hot water, you can't put cold water into that because a container of hot water could cook the cold water. But if you're putting hot water into cold water, you ought to be able to put it in because you would say Tata Agavar. So because of that, Tainas Beit Shammai over here, you can put hot water into cold water, but not cold water into hot water. And this is true, explain the Rishonim, even if the hot water is being poured from a Kli Rishon into a container of cold water, and in the opposite, when you're pouring into the hot water, you cannot pour it even into a Kli Sheni. Now, even though it is important to remember as a basic principle that Kli Sheni is not normally mavashal, and it can certainly not be mavashal cold water. However, Beit Shammai makes a gezeira that if we allow you to pour into something which is a Kli Sheni, you may not know the difference, and you'll pour even into a Kli Rishon. Therefore, they assert putting cold water even into a Kli Sheni, which would mean that if you had a cup of coffee that was very hot on Shabbos, you would not be allowed, according to Beit Shammai, to add any kind of milk to it or cold water to it. Because even though it's a Kli Sheni, and a Kli Sheni cannot be mavashal, we have a gezeira to prevent you because of Tata'a Gavar. The Rabbeinu Tam rejects this entire approach and says that our sugya has got to work out whether you hold Tata'a Gavar or Ila'a Gavar. And he takes a much more prosaic approach. And he says the only reason that we make this distinction between what's on the bottom or what's on the top has nothing to do with bottom or top. It has to do with what you're pouring into and what you're pouring from. Since the norm is that when you pour into something, you're generally pouring a bit of something into a lot of something else. So if you're holding a hot cup of coffee, then if you're going to pour cold into it, you're not going to pour a bottle of milk into it. You're going to pour a couple of teaspoons of milk, which would mean that the milk is going to get heated. That's the problem. And therefore, according to Beit Shammai, if you're going to pour hot water into a cold cup, means by definition, you're going to get a little hot water into a cold cup. And a little hot water into a cold cup is not going to end up cooking anything. On the contrary, the hot water will cool down. But this is not a function of Tata'a Gavar. Beit Hillel Omrim, whereas Beit Hillel says, it doesn't matter whether it's Chamin letoch Tzonein or Tzonein letoch Chamin, it would always be mutter. But let's understand what we're talking about. it would always be mutter if you're talking about pouring it into a cup. Now, a cup, there's two reasons why we would be make out with a cup. Let me just close the tris here because the sun's in my eyes. There's two reasons why we'd be make out in a cup. Reason number one is that a cup is a klisheni. We certainly don't have cups that you cook directly on the fire. Reason number two is that a cup is meant to be used for drinking. Since it's meant to be used for drinking, you have no interest in its being scalding hot. Masha Enke, if you're talking about pouring something into a bathtub, now there's two problems with a bathtub. Problem number one is that in those days, the bathtub was fed directly, you will recall, with the water that is over the H. So they would have this fire right next to it, and it would come directly into the bathtub. And the fact that it was mechuber with a pipe is something that makes the bathtub itself the equivalent of a kli rishon. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is that, as you know from your own experience, when you're pouring water into a bathtub, you want it to be scalding hot because basically it cools down very rapidly on the sides of the bathtub, and you'd like it to be extremely hot when you get into the tub. And because of that, there's a big difference for both reasons. So an ambati over there, Beit Hillel agrees, you can add hot water into a bathtub full of cold water, yes, but you cannot put cold water into a bathtub of hot water. And Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh says, you can't. Now, we don't know what he means. You can't what? But he seems to be saying, you can't even put hot water into cold water, which we'll have to discuss when we get to the Gemara. But before we discuss it, Reb Nachman Paskins, like Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh, whatever it is Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh is saying, the reason normally we wouldn't do this, normally, we would figure out what Reb Shimon ben Manasseh is saying before we would paskin like Reb Shimon ben Manasseh. The problem is that we're going to actually use the psak of Reb Nachman in understanding exactly what Reb Shimon was Manasseh was saying, as we'll see in a moment. We come up with a question about something that's midway between a bathtub and a cup. And what would that be? A sink. Now, remember that sinks, until very recently, as a matter of fact, the first place that I recall seeing mention of a sink that's like a modern sink in which the water comes out of a mixed pipe where the mixing takes place not in the sink, but in the pipe itself, was in Winston Churchill's History of the Second World War, where he was traveling and he speaks about this marvelous invention that he just saw, where you actually mix the hot water and the cold water in the pipe, and then it comes out as the temperature that you wanted, which he went wild over. He loved all these new technologies anyway. But that means that until very recently, you would fill your sink, you'd put in hot water, and then you'd put in cold water, and you'd try to get it at the right temperature. Now, let's consider the relationship of the sink to the two extreme cases that we just had. One case was the cup, and one case was the bathtub. Now, a sink is similar to a cup in the sense that it is a cliché. No way that you heat the water in the sink directly from the fire. However, it's similar to a bathtub because you do like it to be scalding hot when you're about to wash up in that sink. And because of that, the question is, what is the main issue? Is it the klisheni element, in which case it would be like a kos? Or is it the question of how hot you would actually want the water to be, in which case it would be similar to an ambati? That would be the question. So, Reb Yosef, he wanted to paskin that a sink has the same din as an ambati because of the fact that you want it to be hot. So Abaye said to him, Rebbe Chia said not like that. Rabbi Sia said, "Beferish in a braita, which you can't argue with, that a sefel is dafka not like a bathtub, and that since it's a klisheni, there is no gezera that says you're not allowed to put cold water into a sink that's full of hot water." Those of you, of course, who are bekiyim in the power of one will remember that Hopi made the water in the sink just the right temperature for PK. It was part of the actual Indian of mixing water. Okay, so this brings it home. I see Alon is smiling, Gavi is smiling, Akiva is smiling. Good, we got all of our followers. I guess mostly it's a South African book. I don't know why Americans should lose out on it, but what can you do? Okay, in any event, the question is, and here is why we brought Reb Shimon ben Manasseh. The question is, what in the world was Reb Yosef thinking? Oh, there we go. Daniel's up to date. Very good. So now, what in the world was Reb Yosef thinking? Let me ask you something. Does it say beferish that you're allowed to wash up on Shabbos? Ponav yodav viraglav, from water that was cooked up before Shabbos and is sitting on the kira? Yes. Is that water very hot? Yes. Are you going to have to mix cold water in it, in the sink? Yes. So what in the world was Reb Yosef thinking? Because if he thought that we're going to treat a sink the way we treat a bathtub, then our entire anhaga on Shabbos makes no sense. Why? Because l'mayda solak adaita mikar the sevel kukambati. And we just paskened, Reb Nachman just paskened, that the halacha is like Reb Shimon ben Manasseh. And it sure as heck sounded like Reb Shimon ben Manasseh was saying, it's us, you can't even pour into a whole sink of cold water, into a bath, you can't pour hot water. So then that would mean you can't pour hot water into your sink. And then that would mean that there would be no way of warming your water to the right temperature to wash your ponav yada viraglav on Shabbos. So according to Reb Yosef, what did he think? That b'Shabbat rechitza b'chamin leka, what, there's no way to wash up on Shabbos? The Mishnah said b'ferish that there is. So how could Reb Yosef have said something so crazy? I mean, he's wrong anyway because of the brayso of Rabbi Chiya. But why would he have said that? Says the Gemara, he would have said that because you don't understand Reb Shimon ben Manasseh. Well, you think Reb Shimon ben Manasseh was saying that it's usher to put hot water into cold water? And he was going on the last statement of Beit Hillel? No. He was going on the first part, Beit Hillel Matirin, Bein Chamin Letoch Tzoneinu, Bein Tzoneinu Letoch Chamin. You could do it in either direction. So there, Reb Shimon ben Manasseh said, no, you can't. Meaning, no, you cannot put Tzonein into Chamin. You can only put Chamin into Tzonein. In which case, that would be the easy way of taking a warm wash up from a sink, even according to Reb Yosef. It was because of our misunderstanding that we think Reb Yosef said something wild. But wait a second. If that's what Reb Shimon ben Manasseh is saying, then he's basically saying like Beit Shammai. And we're paskening like Reb Shimon ben Manasseh. Reb Nachman would say the halacha is like Beit Shammai. That's exactly what Beit Shammai said. The difference between pouring the hot into the cold or the cold into the hot. Is that possible? No. Reb Shimon ben Manasseh was saying that our report of a putative machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel is wrong. And there never was such a machlokas. Everybody agreed that it's usher to put tzonin into chamin for sure. Omer v'na b'reidu Reb Yeshua. I can tell you that I saw Rava never caring about what he was pouring into. He would always pour cold water into a kli sheni. It didn't make any difference whether it was in a kli like a kos or it was a kli sheni like a sink. He simply didn't care. Why? Because he said, look at this bright. Midotani Rebbe Chiya. A person is allowed to put a kiton shomayim letoch sefer shomayim. You can put a pitcher of water into a sink full of water, whether you're putting something hot into something cold, or whether you're putting something cold into something hot. And that would mean that clearly the Braita ends up paskening that we do not have any concerns about what the direction is. So I was samech on that, and you're allowed to put cold water into a kli sheni no matter what. Says Ravuna Travashi, wait a second, man, that's a totally different case. In that case, you're saying you could put a pitcher. We're not talking about putting a pitcher. We're talking about mixing water. So how do you know that a pitcher that has the glass of the pitcher between the two waters is going to be treated with the same level of chumra that actually mixing the water is? That doesn't make sense. Isn't it possible that we still paskin that you cannot mix the water itself when you're pouring cold into hot, but you could put a whole pitcher when the water doesn't mix? you could put a whole pitcher cold and tahat. So how do you have a right to be semich on this? Amar lei, Rav Ashi said to Ravuna, no. It doesn't mean you put the pitcher. It means you pour from the pitcher. Me'are itmar. What it said in the Braita was that you're allowed to be ma'are adam kito shamayim l'toch sefer shamayim. You can pour out a pitcher of water into a full sink full of water, and it doesn't matter whether the sink is hot and the pitcher water is cold, or whether the sink is cold and the pitcher water is hot. And that is precisely what it was that Rava was doing, and he was relying on that psak. And therefore, bottom line is that if you're pouring cold into a kli rishon, which is the case of the ambati, over there, for sure, it would be aser for two reasons. Either because of Rashi's approach of Tato Agavar, or because of Tosfos' approach, because there's a heck of a lot more of the hot water than there is cold. And that, everybody agreed, there was no one in the whole sugya that said that that was mutter. The most that we found over here was that you could pour it into a seifel, which is a sink. To pour the hot water into the cold bath, to warm it up, that we said is mutter. Again, either because of Tato Agavar, or because you're not going to be pouring that much that you're going to be able to heat it to the point where we have to be choshesh. To pour into a cup of hot water is also mutter, and we do not have a gezerah of pouring into a kli sheni. And for sure, now the question, of course, to pour, if you're pouring hot water into cold water, everybody is maskim, that the coats. Pouring cold water into a cup of coffee or cup of tea or milk, Beit Shammai asers, Beit Hillel is matir, and according to Rav Shimon ben Manasseh, even Beit Hillel never argued, he's moted that it's aser. However, we paskin like this last braita, in which, as everybody knows, we do this all the time. By the way, I just want to tell you that I am being a little bit misleading by talking about pouring milk into your coffee. The reason that I'm being misleading is because we're going to see later on that there is a question if something was already cooked, whether there would be any isser of re-cooking it. And that is a machlokas aposkim when it comes to a liquid. The Ashkenazim believe that even something that was cooked, if it's cool, is the same as if it was never cooked before. However, this is not the das of the poskim of the Sfarim, so that once something has been cooked, it may not be a problem of re-cooking it. Furthermore, even a liquid. Furthermore, there's another question. What temperature is considered to be fully cooked, which leads to the problem of pasteurized milk? Now, pasteurized milk is cooked to different levels of pasteurization. There's ultra-high temperature pasteurization, where over there you can actually keep the milk for months and months, which is very common here in Israel, the Chalav Amid. But there is high-temperature pasteurization, which is more than the just Pasteur's original killing off the bacteria, in which the milk can last for a couple of weeks in a fridge. And that, according to some, is considered to be mavushal. You'll note that we rely on that concept of mavushal when it comes to wine that you got to worry about being touched by a goy. So if it's pasteurized, since yayin that's mavushal is not a problem with yayin neser, the question over there is relying on the pasteurization of the wine as mavushal. So when I threw out the words adding milk, I just want you to understand that that involves a lot of discussion, and I didn't really mean to actually tell you that it would be, by bedavka, it would be usur. But in any event, certainly cold water, if it was never heated before, so then we would be semech on the fact that it's a kli sheni. We're semech on the braita of Rav Huna, which Rava did halacha l'maisa, and which therefore allows us to be comfortable with our hot tea and our hot coffee on Shabbat in a kli sheni, and there's no problem. And now this introduces our kapitan, who is about to introduce the closing sugya of hot pots. Now, this is something that, of course, our kapitan used to be famous for, which was hot pot, not hot pots. But that was in Richie's Pizza. So that's many years ago. And of course, we can't blame him if he's running for office now. He really didn't inhale. Go ahead, Rich.
But never on Shabbos.
It's a long way from Richie's Pizza to the Halakha Mishnah, Rich. Baruch Hashem, the trips we make in life. Just wonderful. Ha'ilfis va'akidera she'eviran merutachim. Now we get into an interesting question. We've raised up until now the question of mixing water, but there's other problems. How about if you've got a hot bowl of soup? Can you put pepper into the soup? Can you put salt into the soup? How about if you've got a actual pot of soup and the lady of the house says, oh my gosh, I forgot to put in salt. Can she put in salt into the hot pot? Now, mind you, there is now something to take into consideration that we haven't spoken of before. And that is that there is a third level besides a Kli Rishon and a Kli Sheni. There is also a Kli Rishon She'al Gabei Ha'esh. So when something is actually on the fire, it's more chamur than a Stam Kli Rishon. So what we're going to talk about now are pots that were very hot. You took them off of the fire. So you had a frying pan or you had just a pot of soup and you took them off of the fire while they were Merutachim. Now Merutachim, technically speaking, remember that Merutachim is defined by Yad Soledet Bo. We don't need for something to be literally boiling. The only time that we take into consideration the extent of the heat is not in terms of heat, but rather how well something was cooked. So there we had indeed four different levels of the impact of the cooking. But when it came to the actual question of temperature, temperature was defined as Yad Soledet Bo, which the shear objectively, as you recall, is Kreso Shel Tinok Nichves Bo. I hope you have all of these terms because we're not going to get that much of an opportunity to keep reviewing them as we go on. Here we're talking about not the amount of heat because we're talking about not a cooked thing, but rather a hot thing. So what we're concerned with are two issues, the temperature, and the temperature, of course, Yad Soledet Bo is the only definition so far that we've had of temperature, and the degree of heat, which is the amount of energy contained, and that is always considered to be full retention when you're talking about a Kli, which itself was on the fire. And that's what we're talking about over here. So that means you took them off of the fire. They are now Yad Soledet Bo, Kli Rishon. The halacha is, lo yitein letochan tavlin, you are not allowed to put spices into these Kli Rishons. So do not add the spices to the actual pot of soup if you think you forgot to add. But the people who have the soup in their soup bowl, so it's in a kara, they are allowed to add these soup, the spices. Notain, we're going to see, by the way, about salt, what the din of salt is, as opposed to other spices to be discussed. So if you have a personal bowl of soup, or you have a large tureen of soup, which you took from the pot that was on the fire. So now the tureen obviously is a klisheni. You could add it letoch hatamchui. Tamchui is any type of thing which is a klisheni. However, I must explain one very important point, and that is very often a tamchui refers to solid food in a tamchui, let's say a meat stew. That is called, here's another term please to write down, a devar gush. A devar gush means that if you're talking about something solid, we cannot treat it the way we treat liquid. And that's because when you're dealing with a liquid that's in a klisheni, the very characteristics of a liquid which causes the convection of the liquid around the sides of the kli, we're introducing an entirely new concept now, is part of the radiation of the heat out of the kli, which is part of the reason that a kli sheni, temperature doesn't matter, it's heat retention is what matters. Now, you understand that that's true of a liquid because the liquid will set up an internal circulation which will lower the temperature of the liquid throughout the soup. But when you're talking about a piece of meat that is boiling hot and it has absorbed energy, it does not give off that energy very quickly. And therefore, when it was cooked inside a pot that was on the esh, it is considered to be a kli rishon itself, not in a kli sheni. So all of our discussions are discussing liquids, not a davar gush, not a solid. And because of that, when we're talking about using a turin, the point over here is a turin of soup, not a turin of meat. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, nah, you can put in spices into anything as long as there's no vinegar in the hot pot or there's no tzir. Tzir is this brine that comes from the fish. If it doesn't have those ingredients, it will not cook the spices. Now, it's not clear what Rabbi Yehuda was saying. Was Rabbi Yehuda going on the resha and he was saying lakula? So in other words, he's saying that when the Mishnah says into a pot, you mustn't put the tavlin. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying, oh, yes, you can, as long as it's not mamish on the esh. So it was an ilfis or a kedera that was taken off of the esh. You can actually add spices directly to your pot of soup. Or was he going on the seifa? The seifa says you are allowed to add spices to your bowl of soup. And he's saying only if there's no vinegar in the bowl of soup, or only if there's no fish brine. But then it would be usher, in which case Rabbi Yehuda would be going l'chumra, because he would be telling me that you can't always add spice to a bowl. Which way? Tashma? Actually, this is an easy question to decide, because it turns out that Rabbi Yehuda explained himself in the Braisa. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, l'kol ilfasin hu notein, you can add spices to anything in that was on the fire, whether it's a frying pan or lekol kederot rotchot or boiling hot pots, you can add all the spices you like, except if the thing that you're adding to has vinegar in it or tzir. So here, Rabbi Yehuda says beferish, I allow you, I'm going lekula, I allow you to put in tavlin, even into a kli rishon. Now, Rabbi Yosef, he thought that we treat salt the same way that we treat tavlin, which would mean that it could get cooked in a pot. And therefore, if a householder felt that there was insufficient salt in the soup, she could not add salt to the pot of soup, and only the people on the table would be able to add salt to their own bowl. So, b'kli sheni, it wouldn't cook, but it would in a kli rishon. Whereas Abaye said to him, look at the braita. Rabraita says that according to Rabbi Chiya, melach einak etavlin, actually salt is not like spices, because salt can get cooked even in a kli sheni, in which case you would not be able to add salt to your soup. And this is against Reb Nachman's psak, because Reb Nachman says, on the contrary, salt is not affected by cooking unless it is cooked directly on the fire. And it needs as much cooking as a big, gigantic piece of the meat of a big shor. So in other words, you're going to need an awful lot of energy to cook up salt, and you could put it directly onto a kli rishon. Whereas there's an ikedi amri that has it backwards. It starts the same. Rabbi Yosef wanted to say that melach is ketavlin, and it would cook in a kli rishon, but in a kli sheni it wouldn't. And according to this, Abaye said to him, well, Reb Chiya says in the Braisa that melach is not ketavlin because it will never cook in a kli rishon. It could only cook on an actual on the fire Kli Rishon, which is Agabe HaEsh. And in this version, the Braita Rabbi Chia is saying, Haynu D'Yom Reb Nachman is exactly what Reb Nachman said, that Tzricha Milcha Bishula, if you want salt, you have to cook the same amount that you would eat, you would cook to cook a big, heavy brisket, and therefore would only really fully cook if it was on the fire. Now, let me just point out that when you're dealing with salt in the Gemara here, you're talking about salt that has never been cooked, because they used to mine salt, which you can still get, and there's people that actually will only use that. It's called rock salt. So they'll only use directly mined salt on Pesach. And I had the opportunity, one could say, of eating in the homes of such people on Pesach. And the food is filthy because it's filled with tiny little rocks and deposits from where you took the salt out. But since they don't trust anybody on Pesach, how do you know that the guy who boiled up the salt and then let it settle into nice salt crystals, maybe he wanted to be machshel all the nice little Jewish boys, and he put some bread in with the salt. So they wouldn't use salt. Anyway, the salt that we use, however, is salt that has already been cooked, and it's a solid. And therefore, according to most shitas, it's the same as any other solid that was cooked. And another please terminology, please, I really hope you've been keeping the terminologies. Ein bishul achar bishul in a davar gush. So since the salt is a davar gush, ein bishul achar bishul. Having once been already cooked up before it was allowed to settle into the nice pretty crystals that we have of salt, there would be no problem of cooking the salt again. And the Mishnah Berurah actually brings this in terms of the machlokas here, because there's actually a machlokas between the Rama and the Shulchan Aruch about whether we're machmir like this second, like the first approach over here to say that it's usser. And if you put the two together, that he says it's roy to be machmir, even though be'ikra din we paskin, like the shitas that say that it's mutter, like Reb Nachman says, and tzricha milcha bishula, like the second lashon, ro'ui lachmir. So the question is it ro'ui lachmir even on our kinds of salt? That's already adding salt to the wound. And therefore, many hold that, and that you wouldn't go so far as to say ro'ui lachmir, but, you know, the Mishnah Berurah says, look, it's always ro'ui lachmir, so at least don't put it into something that's mamish, just been taken off of the fire, and it's really hot and in a Kli Rishon. Anyway, this concludes our exciting discussion today about, but remember, this would mean that you can add pepper to your soup. The only chumrah would be whether you would add salt to your soup, because according to the first lesson, we're going to be more machmir on salt. Okay. Anyway, climbing ahead, and we now move into the next Mishnah, which begins our discussion of a further implication of Hotzah. So we've gone from Hotzah to all of the other issues that relate to the Hachana for Shabbos. And you will recall that Hachana for Shabbos is in the Torah, the Mokar of the whole din of Hotzah. We're going to move on into elements of Muktzah, which, as the Rambam explained, was an extension of the concept of Hotzah, not even to handle things indoors if they aren't necessarily need to be handled. We'll see how far we go on that. And that's a concept that's called Muktzah, which includes the concept of Nolad, something that wasn't there in that form before Shabbat, as we're going to see. And naturally, the first part of Muktzah that we're going to be talking about is going to have a direct impact on our Hadlakas Neros. And this becomes the transition into Muktzah from our initial din of Hachona, Hadlakas HaNer, setting up your stove right before Shabbos, cleaning out your pockets, and so on and so forth. We're now up to the question of what you're allowed to do with those candles. So, with the words from our dear Capitan, lovely. We embark. I see our Capitan even has a new captain hat, I guess in honor of Eilat.
I'm getting ready to go out to the wild. I got to do my shopping.
I see. Uh-oh, Brucey, you better get out there and get those challahs. I think they don't allow Brucey's into Eilat anyway, right?
Nobody.
I'm not allowed to go where you live.
I know, I know. Yeah, but they say today that they're going to allow Brucey outdoors. Up to a half a kilometer. It hasn't been announced yet, but the inside sources. Okay, anyway, so we've got now a question that bears upon Mukta as follows. So you've lit your Shabbos candles, and you notice that the oil is dripping on your tablecloth. Can you put a little cup under it to catch the dripping oil? No, you may not. But if you put it there while it's in the day, then you'd be allowed to leave it there. That's how Rashi understands it. Tosfos understands it to mean, lechatchila, you'd be allowed to put it there, and we're not choshesh that you will end up using that oil, because basically it would be a gzera le gzera. Now, the problem over here, as we explain, a neutin mimena, you cannot use that oil because that oil was actually not muhan. Okay, let's put down that word muhan into your list of terminologies, please. Muhan is the opposite of mukze. So mukze means set aside. Muhan is our perfect word, isn't it? Because we got here through hachana. Amazing. So the word that we want to use throughout that entire sugya, again, is the same word for hachana. In this case, muhan does not mean you were necessarily mechin, but it was part of what was meant to be used on Shabbos. And this is something that was not prepared, so to speak, for Shabbos use. So we've got a problem. Okay, we're going to see that there's a number of issues that are involved in this problem, which is putting your little kles underneath in order to catch the oil. Okay. One fascinating and also new terminology to take into consideration is ein notlin kli ela ledavar hanital. Nitila means moving something. You cannot move something which is not mukta for the purpose of something which is mukta. So you can't therefore take your nice cup, which you could have used for your cup of coffee, and put it underneath the oil that is dripping, because the oil that is dripping is mukta. Why is it mukta? So there's a number of different reasons. We're going to see we have 9 types of mukta that we're going to have to worry about, and we're just getting started on this. So what would be some of the issues that we have to take into consideration? Okay, there's a concept of mukta for mitzvah. And since this oil was now set aside in my mind to be used for the mitzvah of Hadlakas Neiros, so therefore I can't use it for other things. If I now put a cup under it and it drips into that cup, that would mean that I moved the cup for something that is itself immovable. And ein notlin kli ela ledavar hanital. So even if the kli itself isn't mukta, I can't use it for mukta. So that's my first possibility. The other possibility is, since I'm not allowed, as we saw early on in the Masechet, I'm not allowed to take oil out of this ner, because if I do, I'll be over an Isser D'Oraisa of Kibui. So because of that, it's also mukta machmat isur. Since I'm not allowed to use it, so now it's set aside because of the very fact that it's usher. That's a different type of mukta. And therefore, I won't be allowed to move a cup in order to catch that mukta. There's another fascinating issue, which we'll get into later, according to which the shemen in the ner is considered to be mukta because it's a basis. This is a very important terminology. Please write it down. Basis ledavar ha'asur. It provides the base of something that is doing iser. Because basically, the part that is doing iser is the shalhevet. The shalhevet is the actual chemical burn. So the energy that's being emitted is what the Torah asked on Shabbos in terms of esh. But that esh is supported by the wick and the oil. Anything which supports something which is usser is considered to be an extension of that thing, and that is the concept of basis. Basis means the base for. So therefore, there are three good reasons why we should not be allowed to use the oil. And as the Mishnah said, even if the oil ends up falling on its own into something that you would put there before Shabbos, you wouldn't be able to use it on Shabbos. And because of that, you can't lechatchila take a cup and put it under in order to catch something that is not usable on Shabbos. So that sort of makes it pretty clear what the problem is. Now, there's a completely different approach, which we're going to get to later. And that is another munach. This is a very rich daf today in munachim. So here's a technical term, and that is called bitul kli mehechano, to change the status of a container so that it is no longer muchan for use, is a fascinating issue because there's a completely different approach between the various Rishonim. For instance, Rashi here, although elsewhere Rashi says otherwise, and Tosfos. So according to Rashi, the problem of bitul kli mehechano is that since when you put that kli down, you will no longer be able to move it, because now it becomes a basis for the muksa that's in it, correct? So you can't move it anymore. That would mean that for all intents and purposes, you have cemented it in place. Are you allowed to cement a kli in place on Shabbos? No. So the Rabbanan asserted a bitul of a kli mehechano. Tosfos learns exactly the opposite. It's not a problem of binyan, it's a problem of stira. Because if you can no longer use this nice glass that you had, in effect, you've broken it. And you are not allowed to break things on Shabbos either. So therefore, the other problem here, besides the question of whether you're allowed to move a kli for the tzorach of something that is not movable, that is one possibility. The other possibility is that you're being mevatel kli mehechano. Now, this leads us to the question of why we would need this other approach if you're definitely going to be notel a kli. Well, first of all, there's a machlokas about the question of noteling the isur netilas kli letzorach, something which is not nital. But secondly, and we are about to introduce this new concept, and that is considered to be hatzalah. The Rabbanan did not aser these cases of moving muktzah for something that, moving non-muktzah for something that is muktzah, if it is necessary in order to save the thing which is muktzah. And therefore, the question over here of whether the oil is dripping on your tablecloth is a question of saving your tablecloth, especially if there's sparks that are falling, you have actual fire that's falling, that would be a real issue. So what would be the din over there? That opens up our sukkah. Omer of Chista, you are not allowed to put a container underneath a hen that is about to lay an egg because you are concerned that the area is an incline and therefore the egg may simply roll away and break. So what you want to do is you want to put a bowl underneath the hen to catch the egg to avoid breakage. You are not allowed to do that. However, if an egg is in a place where it's likely to get broken because somebody's going to step on it, you could take a bowl and you could put it over the egg to protect it. So, kofeh alea kli shelo tishaver. Now, that sounds strange because if the problem is moving something which is not mukta in order to help something which is mukta, both of these things should be precisely the same. I'm moving the bowl in order to prevent damage to an egg. So why all of a sudden is there a difference between putting the bowl under the hen or putting the bowl over the egg? Again, assuming that the issue is litzorech dover hanita. Obviously, if it's bivato kli mehechano, then there may be a very obvious difference. All of this to be discussed. On my rabbi, my time with Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda says evolution has taught hens to distinguish between inclines and not inclines in the same way that babies do not that often climb off of the bed and fall onto the floor. Often enough, but nonetheless, they do have some sense of don't fall. A hen knows do not lay an egg on an incline, and it can sense when there's an incline. Therefore, it does not all that often occur that it's a dumb chicken. I mean, come on, man, how dumb can you get even if you are a chicken? But when it comes to the hens figuring out, now this is a place where people walk and they may crush my egg. No, there you could be dumb as a chicken. So therefore, it depends. His svara is like this. Look, a chicken is stupid enough to put its beautifully new, freshly laid egg right in the middle of a garbage dump where somebody's going to be walking and crushing it or pouring a can of garbage over it. Therefore, it is matsui, and you're allowed to save it. But generally, a chicken is programmed not to lay an egg where it's going to fall and start rolling away. And therefore, the principle is, Hatzala mitzuya hitiru, the Rabbanan did not aser this halacha of not being neitel a kli, ela letzorech dover hanitel, if it was needed for you to prevent the loss of the dover that was mukta. And why is an egg mukta? An egg is mukta because of yet another concept. Please write down. An egg is the primary example of nolad. It was something that was just hatched today. And something which is just hatched and was inaccessible before is ipso facto muktzah because it wasn't mukhan, it wasn't prepared to be used. And therefore, it is going to be, you would think, usher to move anything for it. But in order to save the egg, it is mutter if and only if it's a hatzalah mitsuya, if it's something that is common. But if it's something that's not common, remember, in general, the Rabbanu do not take into consideration in their gezeros uncommon occurrences. Asks Abaye, how could you say that only hatzalah mitsuya is mutter and hatzalah she'ena mitsuya is not? If it says beferish that in a case where Nishbro Chovichot Tevel Barosh Kago, a guy has got a beautiful barrel full of oil or full of wine, and it's Tevel. Now, Tevel is Muksa, because you can't drink it on Shabbos, right? Okay, so it's Eino Min HaMuchan. And, oh my God, he's got 40 gallons of wine up there, and all of a sudden his barrel develops a crack. Is he allowed to put something under the barrel to catch all that wine or all that oil? So the halacha is over there. He is allowed on Shabbos to bring a kli and put it underneath the broken barrel in order to save the wine or save the oil. Now, over there, it is certainly not common for a barrel to suddenly develop a crack. And how come that's considered to be mutter, to be move a kli that is not mukta for the tzorach of tevel, which is mukta? You see, therefore, says Abaye, that even atzala she'ena mitzuya, they were matir. So why were we mechalek between putting the bowl on top of the egg or putting the bowl under the tarnagolet? Answers, Rabbah, that what we're talking about over here is a gulfei chadate. A gulfei chadate, remember, they used to make the barrels out of cheres, and newly formed cheres that has not had a chance to absorb and actually strengthen itself, often does develop a crack, and because of that, it's considered to be a hatzola that is mitsuya. But ain't okinami. If we were talking about a old barrel, then we wouldn't have been matirit. Eight ve'es to buy it from another mishnah. This is the mishnah we're going to have later. We've been talking about catching the oil. And we said you're not allowed to put it there to catch oil. But it says you're allowed to put a kli underneath an air to catch actual sparks that come, a little bit of flame sometimes will drop off of the petila. Now, this is certainly not normal. It does happen every once in a while. But, I mean, are you going to consider that to be the norm? Says Rabbi, yes. Nitzotzot nami shchichi. At least, obviously, there's different levels of shchichi. So it's more shchiach than having a chicken be so stupid as to lay an egg where it's going to roll away. It's not so shchichi that we would expect that you would take care to do it before Shabbos. And because of that, we were matarit if it occurs on Shabbos.